This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're revisiting the theme of gender with an incredible guest called Alexander Tries. And if you want a bit of background, prior to this conversation, we did a two-part mini-series on gender as a factor in mental health with two really wonderful guests, Juno Dawson and Natasha Devon, two brilliant campaigners, writers, cool multi-hyphenate people. And so I'll include a link for that in the episode description. Today, we're diving in further, kind of looking again at gender stereotyping and how that can cause issues when it comes to mental health, talking about education, representation, so many different aspects of this conversation. And I have such a brilliant guest for that because Alexander has really become a digital influencer, educator, in all things gender. So really, for any of the terms that you hear today, if you're unsure about any of them, you can absolutely check out their Instagram for quick little explainer videos and all kinds of great empowering learning. So I'm really enjoying following, and that's actually how I found them, through Instagram. So cool content. I love it. And I also respect it, like I do so many times when people do video content, because it's enough work doing audio. The idea of then having a video component as well, it feels like a lot, as a podcast person. So this was a conversation I was so looking forward to, and it did not disappoint. We had a great chat. Our perspectives on gender are both quite distinct, and there was a lot of really fun parallels there, which I enjoyed. So I found it kind of surprisingly affirming as well, which is kind of cool. And I hope that, you know, when we talk about gender on the show, I want it to be that across the board. I want to be able to uplift people in ways when so often gender is used to divide and categorize and kind of shrink what people can be, you know, what feelings they can have, what ways they can exist in the world, what appearance ramifications there might be. So good, fun conversation, which we'll get into in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. We love to cheerlead for self-care here at Mental, and you may have realized by now my favorite self-care is skincare. Plus, an important part of self-care that often goes overlooked is setting personal goals that aren't about the outside world, like other people or your career. That's why I'm delighted to introduce personalized treatments to meet your unique skin goals from Skin and Me. Simply take a quick online consultation, share a few filter-free selfies, and you'll get back a bespoke skincare treatment. Packed with powerful active ingredients you usually can't get over the counter. The formulation is created especially for you by the Skin and Me dermatologists and specialist prescribers. All it takes is a few moments to apply your treatment each evening and reveal healthy, happier skin. And your treatment can evolve with your skin to tackle concerns ranging from acne, pigmentation, aging, and so many more. Not only does the product really work, but it's also sustainable, recyclable, vegan, and cruelty-free. So make a commitment to yourself and your skin with Skin and Me. Plus, as one of our listeners, you get your first month for just the $3.50 pharmacy fee with code health at skinandme.com. Normally, it is $24.99 per month, and you can cancel or reformulate your solution at any time for free.
I'm Alexander Tries. As far as back as I can remember, I was definitely raised within the binary. You know, male is male, female is female. My parents are both immigrants. My dad's actually from Sardinia. My mom's from Madeira. They grew up in very Catholic families. And you can imagine that, you know, coming from these like smaller islands, they had very traditional views on what gender is. And they actually still, you know, kind of currently do. And so I remember, you know, being a small child, and when my sister was maybe 1 or 2 years old, she had all these dresses, and I would put them on. and run around the house. And it was kind of somewhat accepted, but not really. There was always a little bit of that commentation of like, you know, those are your sister's dresses. You shouldn't really be wearing that, you know, and it's cute for now, but not later. You know, there was always that stigma behind it. And I remember kind of that's definitely the moment when I started really suppressing my creativity and my gender, essentially. And I started kind of creating this binary, the one that I was raised to believe, because that's what I thought was wrong. And, you know, gender is really all a teaching. It's all what we learn about. And you know, we really internalize that as kids. And as adults, we continue to internalize it, and it becomes this whole big, massive issue. So that's, you know, kind of jumping into this, that's really why I advocate for kids to have education about gender, because I think it's important for them to know that it is okay to be something other than what everybody thinks you should be. And it was really just, it created such an incredibly difficult journey for me, especially into adulthood when I, you know, was extremely resistant to hearing about new gender identities. I remember thinking, no fucking way. Like, there's no way that there's this like non-binary thing. Like, what does that even mean? And like, what do these people want me to call them, they, them? And as I would say them, I'm like, what? I don't understand this. And I was just terrible about it. I'm not ashamed to say that, because I think it just proves that growth is possible. Mm-hmm. But it was something that I realized later on, and we'll get into that, but I realized later on that that was just a part of my conditioning, a part of what I thought was supposed to be the way it was supposed to be. It was, life was very black or white. There was no gray. There were no gray areas, especially when it came to gender.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that honesty, because we all come from our backgrounds. We all have these things kind of impressed on us that often aren't questioned. And this is something that has been very strange to me to observe, partly because it's very parallel to a lot of the work I do with mental health education, that it can be seen as, to me, it's a neutral stance to believe that children should have good education in a broad way of what will prepare them to be adults. But at times I've had reactions to my campaigning for mental health education. And so when that was being introduced, it was alongside like a range of educational reforms, and they included more inclusive conversations around gender. Similarly, there was a kind of backlash to that of like, oh, it's too young for children to know about mental health, or it's too young for them to, you know, see what, from a gender perspective, was pretty mundane stuff, was, you know, when you're doing a slideshow about like families, maybe not all of the families are opposite gender couples. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff that children growing up nowadays won't even notice because they're used to more representation on TV and in their media. But adults can still kind of cling to that stuff. Yeah. As, okay, well, I was raised a certain way. And I guess the point I'm making here is it's been strange to observe stuff that to me is quite neutral and yet is often not perceived in that way. And instead, what's perceived as neutral is encouraging very narrow ideas of gender, very narrow stigmatizing ideas around mental health on young children, and then seeing the consequences of that, including, you know, in my own life and in many of my guests' life, of this. And yet those ways of conditioning are widespread enough that they get the kind of the normal, the safe label.
Yeah. And it's hypocritical because we are taught from a very young age the opposite. We're taught that male is a man and female is a woman, and that's it. And that's an agenda on its own. And so it's very interesting that, you know, there's this agenda being forced onto kids, really. I mean, it's wild to me. It's just so hypocritical that people just don't see that maybe more options than what they can even fathom are true, and that all things can exist in reality.
Yeah. And that has always been true as well. You know, like one example that, you know, I find fascinating as something that is so rarely acknowledged is the experience of intersex people, for example. For listeners that aren't aware, that's a broad encompassing term that can include people that are born with an additional chromosome. So they're not kind of right down to a DNA level, strictly male or female in the kind of purely biological sense that we might think about. But it can also mean, you know, there are ways in which your body's developed pre-birth that similarly you don't fit neatly into one of the two boxes. Yeah. And yet we have a medical system here and for most countries around the world where when you're born, a doctor has to tick one of two boxes, even though intersex people, according to the World Health Organization, make up about 1% of the world's population. So even, you know, when we talk about gender, we're often talking about it as like the stereotypes and the additional layers of which gender is something that is perceived and policed, but even right down to the kind of biological essentialism that some people try and use to justify what are really just a bunch of kind of stereotypes, that doesn't hold up when you've got, I'm doing the maths, 80 million people roughly around the world that don't fit even in that type of way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I told you my parents are immigrants, but I grew up in Venezuela. That's where I grew up, in South America. And then shortly after, we moved to Florida. And the reason I bring up Florida is because, I don't know if you're aware, but there's this whole don't say gay thing that's just absolutely horrifying.
And I'm assuming the listeners are aware, but just in case, that's a bill whereby there's very broad and very oppressive rules going into schools about how much essentially sexuality can even be acknowledged, you know, let alone, you know, it's not necessarily even teaching. It's just essentially you've got to pretend in schools that gay people and anyone other than straight people don't exist. And that's not a million miles away from Section 20, which was introduced in the UK under Margaret Thatcher. So it's very strange to see that coming back decades later when I've seen closer to home how harmful that is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievable that we're in this place where we're kind of regressing. You know, we take two steps forward and three steps back, essentially. I just added a few little numbers to that one. But, you know, it is really interesting to see how people are still extremely uncomfortable discussing it. And again, just kind of bringing up again the hypocrisy of it all. Like, we teach children straightness is what it is and being cisgender is what's right, when, you know, there's so much more out there. So yeah, it's been very difficult to kind of fathom that, because just, you know, and I love my family, but we have opposing views, and they kind of, they somewhat agree with that, you know, in a way where it's just like, how are you missing this? Like, I am your child. I am your, you know, like, how are you missing the whole point of how this affects people like me, and how that education could have helped me, you know, not go through all of the things that I went through, and, you know, wanting to fit in, but never really fitting in, and the pain of it all, actually, because I didn't realize I was going through so much pain until I did. I just simple things like clothing. I always hated the way my body looked in clothes. And I realized once I started dressing up in clothes that I actually loved to dress up in, that was a big part of it, was that I wasn't just being authentic to myself, and it didn't help me like leave space for other things. I didn't have space to enjoy myself and my youth. It was just a very, if I would have been afforded that education, I think I would have been much better off. I mean, in a tremendous way, and maybe in a much younger age.
Yeah, no, it's true, because, you know, it's not, obviously the education isn't, this is how to be non-binary. This is how to push the kind of the boundaries on perceived gender, any more than education I've worked on has been about, you know, this is how to be mentally ill. In fact, so much of the power comes from things being named and explained so that you see that you do exist. So that when you're growing up and you're experiencing something and feeling isolated and alone and all the kind of mental health impacts that can have, instead to see, oh no, there is a word that explains what I'm going through.
Yeah.
It makes such a difference.
Absolutely. And I think that a big part of why I was pushing back, you know, when I first started, I think it was like 2016, 2017, when I really started hearing a lot more about like different gender identities. And I think a big part of the reason I was pushing back was because I really was just so stuck on the fact that the gender was binary and that it was impossible for people to experience both. And it was interesting because, you know, nothing is binary. Really, nothing is binary. And it shows up in very like different ways too, not just in gender, but, you know, the way we think, right? Thinking is not binary. And I'll give you an example of that. Prior to even kind of discovering my own gender identity, I was very binary in my thinking. And that just gave me so much anxiety and distress. And it showed up in things like, there was one day I was throwing this party. I love to throw parties. And I was throwing this Halloween party that was Riverdale themed. Oh. And I had bought all these table settings. And there was so many, you know, like salt and pepper shakers, right? That I needed to put on the table. And I bought, you know, like, let's say 10 of them. And I'm sitting there like setting the table and it's just like looking off. And I'm like, oh, this is looking off. I don't understand. Like, I need to fit every single one of these salt and pepper shakers on here. Like, it has to be on here. It has to be on here. And then I'm like, wait a second. Like, some moment just like clicked for me. And I was like, what am I doing? Why do I have to fit every single freaking salt and pepper shaker? Nobody's going to know if every single salt and pepper shaker was on that I bought is on this table. They're not going to know. But I was so binary in my thinking that I needed to have like everything that I bought, it needed to be on the table. And it was a moment for me. It was a moment where I was just like, wait, you can just let it go. Like, not everything needs to be exactly as it is or as you planned it to be or as you believed it needs to be. There's actually so much more in this world to worry about, number one. And number two, there's so many more options. And it doesn't have to be this one binary thought that you had, that you needed to make sure that this amount of salt and pepper shakers needed to be on the table. I don't know if this is making any sense. It was such a moment for me.
No, it is. I do get it. Yeah, and it's that all or nothing thinking. You know, we talk about it here all the time, like the idea of, you know, with mental health, you're well or you're ill. And that is, you know, and it's obviously so much more complicated than that. And, you know, so I relate to it a lot. And I think it's interesting, partly for me, because my relationship with gender is very flat. Like, I have, you know, I kind of jokingly describe myself as I'm male, but I don't take it too seriously. And that's the best way I have to describe it, right? That, you know, in many ways, whether it's, you know, my work, like growing up, like all of us being told, like, you know, boys don't cry. And yet I'm quite literally best known for being a man with emotions. Like, that has ended up being such a major part of my career. And, you know, there's stereotypes about like how you should present based on that gender binary. And so certain things, like me wearing nail varnish, people, they don't just assume it means something about gender, but they assume that maybe it's some kind of political statement. Mm-hmm. And so kind of everything that I have to say about my gender has ended up being anecdotes about other people's entertaining reactions to me, because to me, that's all I can say. It's flat. I don't find it very interesting. I just have worked on like confidence and overcoming certain mental health things. And gender wasn't very high on my kind of list, because if anything, I didn't realize how much narrow ideas of gender had negatively affected my mental health until I got a lot of the support and was able to work through that. And then these days, it's just like, no, I wear nail varnish because it entertains me. And also, fun fact, men have stronger nails. So depending, do you know what I mean? Depending what you base it on, you can argue any of this stuff, any number of ways of which gender it makes more sense for.
Yeah, it's so exhausting trying to fit in. It's so exhausting. I can't tell you how many times I felt I would come home from like a day of being masked and felt like I just wanted to cry. Like, I just wanted to, I never wanted to unalive myself, but I felt just so exhausted. And I felt like if I just didn't go on, it would be okay. you know, and it sounds so silly, but like, again, wearing clothes that I was trying to present in a way to fit into society. And I was trying to present in a way so that people would like me, so that, you know, so that I could find a man, or, you know, so that I could pass in this world without being ridiculed or made fun of, or, you know, it's just exhausting. It is so exhausting. And I would always take like these odd opportunities to like dress up like in, you know, traditionally women's clothing, quote unquote, air quotes here. But I would take like Halloween, almost every Halloween.
I was about to ask if that was part of the Halloween connection. Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally. I it's still one of my favorite holidays ever, but I use it. I use it as an excuse to dress up, and balls, because I'll tell you, there was, you know, when I lived in Florida for too long, I would dress up, and I had, you know, a lot of straight friends. I didn't really hang out with a lot of gay people in Florida because it shared too much of who I was. I was afraid of being myself. And gay people, you know, were generally very, truly, mostly authentic in ourselves. And I feared that. But I would go with my straight friends to like straight bars, like in full drag.
Even I want to pause on that though, because it's interesting, you know, that you found that threat. You know, I think that's quite a common thing, that you meet people like yourself, and if you're not feeling ready to be yourself in that way, then that can be a big threat, you know, that they'll bring out an authenticity that you're not ready to live in. But I think even there's like, you know, a step further than you said there, where it's not the threat of being yourself, it's the threat of what are the consequences. You know, you've grown up living a life of there are two boxes, you come across the further possibilities in the world. And sometimes the things like that that you identify with, you're like, oh, but if I lean into that, what will be the consequences? Will I ever be able to come back from it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a huge fear, and I was extremely afraid to pull the trigger, essentially. And it's like, if I existed in that community, then I became part of that community. And like, although I wanted to in my soul, I didn't want to deal with the consequences of it. I mean, you couldn't have said the word in a better way. It's really the consequences of what that would mean. You know, how would people then perceive me? Because they perceived me in like this only way for so long. And so pulling that trigger could have meant I could lose friends, I could lose family, I could lose just my job, I could lose things, especially, you know, this was in like the early 2000s and again in Florida, where it's just like, I hate using this word, but the word faggot was being thrown around like all the time. And, you know, I had friends who would just say things about gay people, and I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, I'm gay, right? And, you know, and friends, again, another air quotes statement.
Did you ever get the fun one of, oh, I don't mean you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But not you. You're cool gay. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. But I remember saying things too like that. Like I would say things like that because I didn't want them to know. And I would say stupid shit that I just, out of fear that they would find me out that I was like, not just gay, but like, I was also like, I also felt more feminine. And I would say things like, you know, sometimes I feel like I have the soul of a woman, but like the man of a body of a man. And even unknowingly, like, I didn't know what I meant by that, but I would say it sometimes to certain people, almost like to check and see, like, you know, gauge where their thoughts were. And they were like, yeah, sure, whatever. And yeah, it was very interesting. And I was maybe 19 before I really started embracing it. And I started making more friends in the community. But even then, I was still like, even in the gay community, and this is something we need to talk about, there's a lot of transphobia. I remember, you know, the jokes being made about trans women and just mean things being said. And like, also when it came to like dating, that was another thing. Like trans women were just, you know, looked at differently. And they were looked at as like there was something wrong with them. Like there was like it was a medical condition, you know, like, oh, they're transgender. Oof. You know, and like, oh, I wouldn't date. And I would hear friends of mine, gay friends of mine saying like, oh, I would never date a trans woman. Friends of mine who would say I would never date a drag queen. And I'm like, you realize it's like, they're just putting on makeup. That's it. You know, and It's just very interesting. There was so much stigma around it, even in the gay community. And it, that affected me too. Because even in where I thought I could be safe, I wasn't safe.
Yeah. And then you're kind of presented with a whole load of new stereotypes where you're like, okay, so I don't have to conform with some of the straight stuff, but I've still got to be a specific type of gay to get acceptance within my own people.
Yeah. And I did. I tried that for many years. I tried to be this, you know, masculine guy with my little hints of, you know, Halloween adventures where I would dress up. And, you know, I would go to like straight bars with my friends, like on Halloween, like dress up in full drag. And like, I remember like there was one situation where I went and like, when I was younger, I would shave my beard and everything and like really do full drag. And I went to this bar and I would say I could pass pretty well back then. Like, especially when I was younger, I had a rounder face and I would get hit on by like straight guys. And I remember getting so like nervous and scared that I was going to be found out. And it was interesting because that fear, I had that same fear in like everything, that fear of being found out. And it didn't matter. It was like straight guys at straight bars. Like if they found out, what were they going to do to me? But just even in my community, like if they found out, what are they going to do to me? If my parents found out, what are they going to do to me? If my sibling, my sister found out, what is she going to do? What is she going to think? My friends, all of that. It was just very, there was so much fear behind it. I'm so grateful that I had like the opportunity and the absolute privilege to be able to seek like mental health help. And, you know, I got a therapist that was like incredible, like at the lowest part of my life ever. And also mental health was like a huge stigma in my family. Again, immigrants who just are like, what's mental health, you know? And I had the privilege to go do this talk therapy with this amazing therapist. And, you know, he really opened me up to so much outside of the binary thinking that I had. And he wasn't actually the one who like, you know, got me out of the trans closet, but he really led me in that direction in so many ways with other things that I needed to kind of budge on in my thinking. And that was around the same time with the salt and pepper shakers on the table that I just had a moment where it clicked and I'm like, oh my gosh, this world is so much bigger than I think it is. And there's so many opportunities that I'm missing because I'm only thinking in one way, in one dimension, but there's so much more. And, you know, that led to so many other adventures, which like have led me here where I am today and why I advocate for it so much. But I really had I think for me, like the moment when I really kind of knew I was different, when I could finally identify that I was gender fluid, was during the pandemic. I'm saying the word. But I had a lot of time on my hands and I always loved to play with makeup. Love to play with it, but I didn't really explore it because again, I was afraid of what people would think if I did makeup outside of Halloween. So I only did makeup. I had a makeup kit with the same MAC foundation that I had for way too many years. Every time I put it on a breakout, I wonder why. It was like 8 years old by that time. Oh. And so I pulled out my kit and I'm like, you know what? This, like, I have a lot of time on my hands. I'm going to try this makeup on and I'm just going to try to do different looks and see how I like it. And so I did. I pulled out my makeup kit and I started doing my makeup. And my husband, he's so sweet. He was like, oh my gosh, can I do a little quick video of you? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so he took out his phone, did a little video of me after I had done my makeup. It was pretty tragic. And the makeup, not the video. Well, the video too, because of the makeup. So he did that. And then it led me to this whole adventure into like starting a YouTube channel. Because again, I was extremely bored and I needed to let out some sort of creativity. So I did. I started a YouTube channel, but the YouTube channel it was mostly focused on like makeup tutorials, which is hilarious to say now because I'm like, I knew nothing about makeup, but I was like trying to do makeup tutorials and I was trying to kind of fit into like what the makeup tutorial person would be like. I was trying to be like Manny MUA or something like that. And then I discovered like, because in these videos that I would create for makeup tutorials, I would always have this little story time section. And I would tell a story as I'm doing my makeup. And I realized that that's what was getting a lot more of a reaction were these little stories that I would tell. One, which was the one I told about me wearing my sister's dresses and running around and my family, you know, somewhat disapproving of that. And I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like something that people really want to hear and listen to. And then it was actually through that, through people's like comments and all that, that I was just like, wait a second, maybe there's something more here that I'm trying to let out than just makeup tutorials and then just doing makeup. Like maybe there's something else I need to explore here. And it was within like the matter of like a day where I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm totally not like cisgender person. Like I can finally identify like what I've been trying to say for so long, I guess, you know, when I used to say that I felt like a woman, you know, that my soul was, I had the soul of a woman, but you know, the body of a man. And I was like, I really started thinking about it and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually, I think like gender fluid. I think I'm non-binary. I think I'm gender fluid. Like, wait, what? And it was just like a very quick instant moment where I knew everything just fell into place. And it was almost like I let out a breath of air, like that I'd just been holding on to for so long. I'm like almost emotional about it because it was a moment that just changed my life. And it was through just trying to be creative. And I remember that day I told my husband, I was like, hey, I'm coming out as non-binary, just like that. And he doesn't know how impactful this was, but his response was like, cool. And his acceptance, like that instant acceptance, that instant feeling of like, oh my God, I'm still loved no matter who I am. That was the moment. That was really just the full moment. It just, everything came full circle. And I finally realized like, okay, this is what my actual journey is. It's not just doing makeup tutorial videos. It's actually a journey to discover who the fuck I am. And I wanted to share that with people, you know, in a different way. And so, you know, that birthed Alexander Tries Instagram, where I decided to just go more in the educational route. And I also just want to educate people through my experiences. And hopefully that would help other people, because I was seeing that it was helping other people just through my little small stories that weren't as focused. Mm-hmm. So it was just it was just such a moment for me and realizing that. And I then like finally became more of my authentic self. And I then had space to really explore like my own mental health and like how my mental health and my gender are really tied in together. Because if I wasn't being authentic, I had no space to have my mental health where I needed to be.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true, because you can end up just treading water with it, that you're just so focused on coming across a certain way, it doesn't allow you any of the space to be like, okay, but who actually am I? And it sounds like a big part of the release in that moment that you describe was releasing this entrenched idea that no one can love me as the person I actually am.
Yeah. And it's quite the opposite, actually. I think I've received more love and more support and more. And I say that just even for myself, like I've loved myself more. I love myself more now, more than ever. Actually, my tagline is I love me so I can love y'all. And it's truly that important to love yourself. And you can't really love yourself if you're not being authentic to yourself either. And if you don't love yourself, you also can't have that mental health. But loving yourself is a big part of mental health. It's very interesting. You know, we know RuPaul says this. If you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else? It's essentially the same saying in a different way. But it's a tale as old as time. If you don't love yourself, you have no space to love others. You have no space to do what needs to be done for you. And oddly enough, I got pushback on that when I made a post about that, about mental health and the correlation with loving yourself. And I don't mean that you are incapable of love if you don't love yourself. I think everybody's capable of love. However, there's that old saying, you can't pour from an empty cup, cup or whatever it is.
You can't an empty jug, I guess. Yeah. But either way.
And it's like, you need to have that love so that you can give to other people. It's like that health or that love for yourself is like a bank account. You have like a certain amount of love money that you have, and you get to decide how to spend it. But if your account is empty, how are you going to spend it? There's nothing to spend.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. And yeah, I relate to that a lot. A really profound learning for me on the dating podcast that I host is how throughout whatever kind of trials and tribulations you have with the crazy dating world and the apps and all the rest of the nonsense we make jokes about on that show, there is something wonderful about your ability to love others being something that can be more linear, that you can work on and continue to grow that capacity. And I think that's where a lot of it makes sense for me, that you're around you all the time. So if you can practice loving yourself, of course, you're going to be better at loving in general. Mm. You know, we can often be the people that are most difficult to love because we can, you know, see every perceived flaw. We can decide all kinds of things are flaws. We can have certain mental health conditions that exacerbate negative perceptions of self. And it's a lot of work. You know, I really do think it's a lifelong thing to overcome that. But one of the really fun learnings I think we have in common is when you are more authentic and when you do work on your confidence and your self-love, that is attractive. And that precedes, I think, gender or any number of things. You know, you can be the most attractive person of whatever gender, of whatever height, of whatever background, the best version of you when you're showing up in the world as a more kind of full and loved person. And a lot of that love can come from you.
Yeah. It's interesting to see how just being fully authentic on its own really motivates people. It's something that, like, I mean, I get messages from people telling me that I've changed their lives or that I've helped them discover things. And I'm like, I'm not even trying to do that. I'm just trying to be myself, you know, but it's something that's like a, you know, it comes from that. It stems from just, and I wish everybody would really understand this, but being authentic is so good for everybody. It's not just good for you, but it's so good for everybody. And I have to say, it is daily work. All of this stuff, loving yourself, being authentic, all this stuff is daily work. You know, because we are so conditioned to think a certain way, those thoughts creep in, you know, and we all kind of revert sometimes. And it's like, you know, you just have to daily remind yourself daily, you know, that you're going to be okay. People are going to love you. And, you know, when you're kind of being hard on yourself, you have to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. Just stop that. Stop it right now. This is unnecessary. And I think that people think sometimes when I say that, you know, I love me so I can love y'all. Or if you don't love yourself, you can't love other people. I think they think that it's like, oh, you have to reach this certain point of love yourself and then that's it. But it's not that linear in a way. It's very like, it's daily work, essentially. It's just daily work. You have to remind yourself daily to love yourself. You're not just going to like one day magically love yourself and that's it, celebrate the end, like happily ever after. That's a fairy tale. Those don't exist. So, you know, it's important that people remember that it is daily work and don't beat themselves up when they're going through moments, because we all have real things that happen to us in real life and challenges. And, you know, if we can overcome those, which we have to daily, you know, we'll be much better off. But it's okay to also give yourself that break sometimes and be like, yeah, I'm human. And some days I just don't like this about myself or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. All of that plays a big part though in mental health, is also accepting that you're not always going to be happy and perfect, and that there is no like end goal of being happy. It's a daily goal of trying to find happiness where you can, how you can, when you can.
Yes. Yes. If it was something you could bottle and consistently have, Coca-Cola would already have done it.
What flavor would that be?
Well, that just came into my head off the cuff. And then I was like, oh shit, their actual slogan is like open happiness, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
That was even more fitting than I meant it to be. What? I don't even know. We can't decide the flavor because happiness is different for everyone, right?
It is. I think happiness for me would be bubblegum flavored.
Oh, I mean, completely unrelated side note, but the other day I had bubblegum flavored fudge.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
And it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff going on in your mouth at once, but it's so good. And I haven't found it since. So I need to like find a better supplier for that. So good. And on that weird note, we will start wrapping up. I could easily talk to you all day, but if people want to get more of you, there's loads of you on the internet. You have a wonderful Instagram that you've mentioned. You do YouTube. Where can they find all of that?
Yeah, really where I'm focusing my efforts right now is Instagram. Short form education is easy to digest. And you can find me on Instagram at alexander.tries, and that's alexander.tries.
I love that. And I would totally recommend checking out your Instagram. I love it so much. That's how I found you. And also, the visual is great because you are stunning. You are so talented with makeup, whatever your humble beginnings with it. Look, you ducking off screen. No, I mean it. And, you know, the one last thing I'll kind of ask you about, because I think it can often be missed in conversations around gender, is we can be here talking about how so much of it is made up, you know, with, you can take makeup as an example, where there's a long kind of stereotyped way of it. But I mean, we could have a whole other chat about how that doesn't hold up to the light, that makeup was actually pioneered by often royal families or rich men all over the world that wanted to enhance and, you know, deceive the public about their appearance. So, you know, it's a complicated history, but right now it is still seen as majority a female thing. And yet when we're here sort of saying that this stuff is very arbitrary and doesn't make sense, I think sometimes people can then not get it when in exploring your gender, you do lean into things that are stereotyped around gender, right? That some people might be like, okay, well, if these things aren't one or the other, then why, when you're exploring your femininity, would you even go to makeup? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, as someone with my very flat approach to gender, my answer is that I didn't believe that makeup was only for women anyway. And as someone that was raised as a man and identifies that way, I'm not around the same kind of pressures on my appearance, or certainly no pressures around makeup skills I should have in terms of my gender. And yet I find it something fun. And so I dip in and out of it, but I don't feel any pressure to wear it every day. I kind of just do it for fun sometimes. And I don't believe that that is a gender thing, right? I just didn't believe that I shouldn't be wearing makeup ever as a man in the first place. But yeah, you give me your answer. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think a lot of us, you know, buy into and fall into social norms because it's a part of humanity. It's a part of, you know, our reality right now. Maybe things will be different in the future, but right now it is what it is. And maybe in the future, makeup won't be identified with something that just, you know, traditionally female women use. And I always push this agenda because I think it's really important for people to understand this. But I am sitting here before you with a full, you know, a full face of makeup. But when I take this off, I'm still gender fluid. I'm still non-binary. I'm still transgender. It doesn't change. The makeup doesn't define who I am as a person. But because it is a social norm, I lean into it and I enjoy it. And it's something that, you know, I was taught was for women. And so to me, it makes me feel a certain way. However, I wholeheartedly agree. Makeup is not, we gendered makeup. Humans gendered makeup. And even more recently, again, this is, as you mentioned, historically, men used to wear makeup before it became uncool. But I really believe that it's important for people to know that what you wear is not really who you are. And I think that people miss that a lot. And they'll ask me like, oh, when I'm not wearing makeup, they'll say like, oh, how are you transgender? Like, you're not transgender, you're just a man. And I'm like, it's because you know nothing. But go on my Instagram and you can learn a whole lot.
No, I think that's, yeah, I love that. That's such a great way of putting it. And I think that's the best answer there is, that it can be a way of expressing your gender in a time when, you know, the stereotypes are still there. And so if you've had a lifetime of being taught that makeup is beautiful, then when you want to feel beautiful, it's probably something you'll lean into. In the same way, like, when I first explored makeup, I explored it via, like, male content creators. So to me, it, like, was something I was able to explore in a way that was still consistent with my gender. And I think we're moving towards that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is...
I love that.
Yeah. So we'll wrap up there. Thank you again. You're such a delight.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.